Welcome to Elevate, the podcast where trial lawyers Ben Gideon and Rahul Ravapudi talk about the real issues that come with the fight for justice. So let's find inspiration in the wins. Let's learn from the losses. But most of all, let's keep learning and getting better and keep getting back in the ring. Are you ready to elevate your own trial practice, law firm, and life? Let's get started. Produced and powered by LawPods.
Hey, it's Ben. Raul and I started this podcast because we love hanging out with fellow trial lawyers and sharing ideas that can make us all better. And both of our firms also regularly collaborate with other lawyers across the countries in cases where we can add value. If you're interested in collaboration, or even if you just have a case or an idea that you want to bounce off us or brainstorm, Raul and I are going to be hosting confidential case workshops the first Wednesday of each month. So here's how it works. If you have a case or an idea that you want to talk about or brainstorm with us, just send me an email to ben@elevate.net, E-L-A-W-V-A-T-E.net, or go online to elevate.net and submit a case workshop request. We will schedule you for a confidential 30-minute Zoom meeting where we can talk about your case to see if we can help. If you feel like there would be good value in collaborating on the case further, we can talk about that. If not, that's okay too. We enjoy helping other trial lawyers because we know someday you'd be willing to do the same for us if we needed your help. So again, if you're interested in workshopping your case with us, just send an email to ben@elevate.net or fill out a case workshop request at elevate.net, and Rahul and I will look forward to chatting with you soon. Today's episode of the Elevate podcast is brought to you by Filevine. Filevine has a software program called Lead Docket, which is the gold standard for managing your new case intakes and leads, your Glengarry leads, your Glenn Ross leads, and all of your other leads. So check them out at Filevine and manage your leads. We're also brought to you by Steno. Rahul, you guys work with Steno.
Steno is the best in court reporting services, not just in court reporting services, but even some of their technology tools. We're talking about AI a little bit on this podcast and their transcript genius, where they can summarize and take interrogatories based on deposition transcripts, is so useful. If you haven't tried it, definitely try it.
We're brought to you by Hype Legal. Hype Legal does digital marketing, web development for trial firms. It's owned by our good friends, Micah and Tyler. They recently redeveloped our firm's website, so you can check our website out. If you like it, give them a call and they can help you out too. And finally, we're brought to you by Expert Institute. Rahul, you guys work with them, right?
We both use Expert Institute because you always need to be cutting edge in the experts that we use in our cases. Going to the repeat experts every single time is going to make you a lesser lawyer. And you always want to keep up. And the best way to do that is with Expert Institute.
Hey there. Before we dive in, quick heads up. Today's episode is a highlight from Elevate's most popular conversation this year, featuring Inner Circle legend Charla Aldis. It was just too good not to reshare. And stay tuned, because Ben will be appearing on a future episode of Charla's podcast called More Likely Than Not. Enjoy.
Hi, it's Ben. I wanted to let everyone know that we have an opening for a trial lawyer position at my law firm. It will be the eighth lawyer at my firm. So if you're passionate about representing individuals and high-stakes PI and medical malpractice cases, reach out to me and let me know you're interested. Just send me an email at bgideon@gideonasonlaw.com. We are thrilled to welcome Charla Aldis to the podcast today. She's from Dallas, Texas, a partner at Aldis Walker, and has many great successes, many incredible verdicts. And we've had her partner, Brent, on the show before, but it's taken us almost 4 years, but we finally convinced Charla to come on and talk to us. So thank you so much for doing that. So how does Charla Aldis become Charla Aldis? where did this journey all begin? I mean, you're a force of nature.
Oh, heavens no, I've not always been like this. And in fact, in my mind, I'm still Charla Glass from Sherman. So how did I become a lawyer? It's an interesting story, actually. I was in vocational office education program in high school where you went to school for half a day and worked for half a day. And I worked for an accountant. But I remember it like yesterday, a lawyer from the Twin City, Denison, she was a family lawyer, a female, came and talked to our vocational office education class. And I knew immediately, that's what I want to do. I want to be a legal secretary. I worked full-time through college and law school. I was in the vocational program, and I get a little emotional every time I talk about this. I took one core class. It was a history class. And the teacher just took a liking to me. And he said, why aren't you doing the core curriculum? Why are you doing vocational studies? And I said, I want to be a legal secretary. He goes, I really, really, really am going to encourage you and will mentor you. I want you to get an associate's degree and think about a four-year degree. I got my associate's degree and was fortunate enough to get a scholarship to Austin College, which is the small liberal arts college in my hometown, Sherman. And lucky enough to get a mentor there named Dr. Kenneth Street. And he was the constitutional law professor. And I took his con law class, and I just can't tell you how much I fell in love with it. Talking about change and changing the world and changing society. I made a lot of money doing traffic tickets. And then my OBGYN, who ultimately delivered all four of my children, was sued. And he said, Charla, I want you to represent me. I said, well, Dr. Booth, there's a problem. I have no idea how to do that kind of law. I do traffic tickets and car wrecks and comp. And he got me involved in that case as his personal counsel. I made friends with the insurance adjuster for the large medical malpractice. And he said, I want you to start doing my work. I'm like, me? Do your work? And he said, yeah. And the first time, I shouldn't be saying this, people are going to be embarrassed for me, but I'm not embarrassed for myself, so it's okay. The first MedMal deposition I went to, they were talking about an ENT, and I took a break and I called the adjuster. I said, what is an ENT? He goes, oh my God, have mercy. I ended up breaking off from the firm that I opened the office for in Sherman and went with a group, and the name of the firm, it was a Cooper, Aldous, and Scully. It's still a very prominent defense firm here in Dallas. And I went out and tried. We had brought in a case. The firm was the only plaintiff's case, and it was a methyl tertiary butyl ether case, MTBE case, where Conoco had contaminated the underground storage tank well water of about 128 trailer park residents. And I went out and tried that case in Wilmington, North Carolina. And on the second day of trial, the clients took up an offering, so to speak, and bought me a gold-plated Guardian Angel lapel pin, which I've worn every day to trial since then. And that's when it solidified to me, okay, this is what I need to do. You know, as a mom, one thing that I did that just came to my mind, I always put pictures of my clients on the refrigerator door, would tell my kids, okay, I'm not here. This is who I'm fighting for. And I firmly believe it made them more compassionate and empathetic people.
I mean, you have wonderful children who've grown up to be great humans, so you must have done something well.
Right. And they're my greatest accomplishment by far.
There's a twist like that in almost every case you have, where there's something slightly out of the box that's unexpected that you do.
I think it causes my law partner, Brent, great consternation. He's always sitting there like, oh God, what's coming next? It works for me. I'm comfortable in the courtroom, and I really believe you need to catch the other side off guard. They never need to know where you're coming from. Sometimes, heck, I don't know where I'm coming from. Think outside the box. Well, I had a case where I represented an interventional cardiologist in a law firm, a big firm in Dallas, represented him for years hourly, and they asked me to come in and try the case, and it was a fraudulent peer review defamation case. And he was really not a nice person, but they did him wrong, and he was a good doctor, and I liked him. We ended up getting a $366 million verdict, and there was only $10,000 in damages in the case. Anyway, he was testifying in federal court, and the defense were just killing him because he was a jerk and he talked too much. So I stood up and said, Your Honor, I need to object. And the judge said, this is your client. I said, I'm very well aware, but I object. Non-responsive. He needs to answer the question.
So after that MTBE, is it MTBE?
MTBE, yeah.
After that verdict, then that's when you left the defense firm and opened up your own plaintiff shop?
Opened up my plaintiff shop. I held my nose and jumped off the cliff.
Were you by yourself at that time? Or
I was, and I was a single mom of four kids. It was scary, scary thing. But, you know, it was one of those things, if you have a real conviction in your heart that you know you're doing the right thing. I just thought, if I don't do it now, I never will. I'd been practicing about 13 years, I think, at that time. And I always thought in my back of mind, I can always get a job.
How did you get cases when you started?
You know, it was really crazy. I got a lot of cases from plaintiff's lawyers that I'd been up against as a defense lawyer. They would send me some of their smaller cases because I always got along with the plaintiff's lawyers. So maybe a couple of them, maybe not. But people asked me when I switched to the other side of the docket, how did you get along with people? I'm like, the people I trusted when I was a defense lawyer, I still trust. The people I didn't trust, I still don't trust. It was the same. In 2003, I had the lovely privilege of reinventing myself from a professional standpoint because my entire docket was medical malpractice. We still do a little bit of it, but with the caps in Texas, you can't run a firm really. Well, some people do, but they do more of a national practice. I just reinvented myself, and I'm glad I did. I loved the medical malpractice, but I really enjoy the variety of different types of cases. I mean, people often ask me, why do I still do medical malpractice? Because to be just crass, you can make a lot more money doing other cases. I believe I have to because there are people that need me. And we take some of the capped cases just if the care is just so egregious that we really want to make a difference. But I still think we have to fight the fight. And hopefully before my daughter retires, the pendulum will swing and we'll have some change in the law here in Texas for medical malpractice cases. It breaks my heart when families come in and, for instance, if a doctor or hospital has malpracticed and it resulted in the death of their child, I have to tell them it's worth $250,000. I mean, that's rough. And even in the Med-Mal cases that we have, we don't have the big stick. We can't effectuate change like we used to. One of the first Med-Mal cases I tried on the plaintiff's side was for a little girl named Rachel Martin. She was 13. She was born with cerebral palsy, but her parents had lived their life to mainstream her in school, done an amazing job. She was a very small child. She had a condition called subglottic stenosis and went into the hospital to have it fixed, minor surgery, but she had to be consciously sedated for 3 or 4 days. And they basically overdosed her on propofol, Diprivan, the same drug that killed Michael Jackson. And her urine went from tea color to coffee color to black before they realized something was going on. And she had developed rhabdomyolysis and had multi-organ failure and died. And we tried that case. We got a $268 million verdict. But what was really cool as a result of that case, because we had the big stick, AstraZeneca, the manufacturer of Diprivan, we had them put in their package insert that rhabdomyolysis was an adverse event, could be an adverse reaction to the drug. So I believe that saved lives in our settlement of that case.
All I'm hearing is nine-figure verdicts. Is an eight-figure verdict a bad day for you, Charla?
Oh, gosh. Heavens, no. I don't mean it like that at all.
No, I mean, this is amazing. It's just on such a diverse array of cases, too. Do you have to change your trial presentation based on the type of case or through your experience?
I had never really consciously thought through that. But I know in 2019, and our firm is small. We at the time had four lawyers. We still have four lawyers, but we tried in 2019 before COVID, we tried four cases in 13 months to a verdict. The first one was a dram shop case. The second one was a product defect case. The third one was a wrongful death. And the fourth one was sexual assault. I don't want to do that year again. It was a lot. Then COVID hit and we got a big respite. But I can't say that I would go in and try a dram shop case like I would a sexual assault case. I always tell people, you know, if you lose a leg or lose a limb, you know, you can see it, but sexual assault is an injury to your soul. The first sexual assault case I tried about 15 years ago was for a young woman who went to one of the most prominent private schools here in Dallas and was molested. People say an affair. I don't call it an affair when you're a 16-year-old child and a 34-year-old teacher. He groomed him and had a sexual relationship with her for several months. When the school found out, the young lady, her three older siblings had gone to that school. It's the only school she'd ever gone to, and it's a fancy school here in Dallas. And the school let the teacher resign and then brought the dad in while the daughter was with her mother looking at a college and said, she's going to have to leave the school or we're going to expel her, and there is no door number three. And they kicked the child out of the school, quote, Christian school. I will tell you, that was the most emotional case I've ever tried. They offered us money, but I said, I'm not going to settle for money. You're going to make some changes. And the three people that made the decision to expel this child from this Christian school because she was molested by a teacher are no longer going to be associated with that school, or I will never take a dime. They didn't believe me. And we tried that case. Anyway, we won that case and we got punitive damages. It was an all-female jury, and there were four Black women on the jury, and they brought in our state representative, who's this big Black guy that I love, Senator Royce West, to help help the school. And I told him I was just glad a Democrat was making some money off all the bastards. And during the trial, as an all-female jury, he stood up and said, Your Honor, I would object and ask Miss Aulis to use her inside voice. Your Honor, I am so sorry. I've raised four kids, so the outside voice just comes naturally to me. He said, well, I have seven children. I said, well, I birthed my babies. Anyway, long story short, we won that case. It was $10, $12 million. The money was not what was significant. We ended up settling. As a result of the settlement, all three of the people, including the founder of the school, the Episcopal priest, had to leave the school as a result of the settlement.
I know you've spoken on representing medical providers who have been singled out for providing abortion care to women in Texas in violation or allegedly in violation of some of the oppressive laws that have been enacted there. How do you decide which of these cases you're going to take on?
Number one, I would worry if my children were still at home, but no, I don't. I'm tough. I'm a street fighter, Ben. I was raised in East Sherman. It's not like East LA, I don't think. I'm not afraid at all. And do I care about the standing of the community? I couldn't give a flying flip. I think people know that I take cases I believe in. We always try to do at least one significant pro bono case at a time. We represented the physician at UT Southwestern who started the transgender care clinic at Children's Hospital here in Dallas. She came to see me when the governor, or I should say a political person, threatened the school with funding if they didn't close down the clinic. And the clinic was closed down with no notice to the patients. It was horrific. And I'll be honest with you, I did not know anything about transgender care, about transgender youth. I just knew that they were being discriminated against. And I met with this doctor. It broke my heart to hear the stories. So we spent a year and a half and a lot of time on that case. And we were able to get temporary restraining order and a temporary injunction. We couldn't reestablish the clinic, but we could at least allow her to continue to treat the patients under a temporary injunction.
You mentioned that you guys have four lawyers. Did you feel pressure to grow? And why did you choose to keep yourself at the size that you are?
It's just a personal choice for me. I really like to know the clients. But now we've talked about maybe adding a few lawyers at some point. But historically, I've always liked to be involved in the cases and know the clients. It's really a personal thing with me.
Didn't you just try a case with your daughter? Just try to keep
it. I did. It was where we're sitting there. Hang on, I'll show you. I'm taking a witness and she's sitting at counsel table with me. Do you see this?
Post-it notes.
Okay. She's sitting there at counsel table with me and she goes, Mom, object, object. I said, don't talk to me, pass me notes. So she did these sticky post-its, about 10 of them. They have asked and answered, speculation, leading, hearsay, misleading, lacks knowledge, expert opinion, vague, and irrelevant. She made these while I have this witness on the stand and she's pointing to them as I go. And I'm like, you get one thump per question. You don't get to thump all of these. It was hilarious.
We had Brent on the podcast a while back. Can you talk a little bit about how you've worked that partnership and how you like divide up responsibilities?
Yeah, I always tell people he's the brains and I'm the mouth. That's kind of how it works. Brent is brilliant. One of the most brilliant lawyers I've ever worked with. It's amazing when we have a case, I'll meet with a client and I come in. I say, okay, we got this case. Here it is. And he goes, well, there's a slight problem. I said, what's that? He said, we don't have a cause of action. I'm like, you'll figure it out. And he does.
Do you have any advice for lawyers on how to navigate, whether it's a lawyer, opposing counsel who's just mean to be mean, a judge who's just mean to be mean?
I would say that the first thing that comes to mind is always remember it's not about you, it's about the client. And if you go into a situation, well, I always tell young lawyers, you got to be authentic, you got to be yourself. If you go into a situation where they're all being jerks, I usually try to kill them with kindness. But let me tell you this, practicing as a woman is very different than practicing as a man. And I've told my daughter that it was not, she talks to me about sexism in our profession. I'm like, honey, you should have been here 37 years ago. I mean, and I see the courtroom as the great equalizer in our society. And I pray to God that we never lose that equalizer of the Seventh Amendment. I believe that you don't chase the money. The money will come if you do the right thing for the right reasons. That's my view. It's the way I've always tried to live my life and conduct my practice in that way. But it's always about the client.
Did we rise to the challenge today? If so, tell a friend. If not, tell us what would make the podcast more valuable to you. Thanks for spending your valuable time with us today. And remember, When we elevate people and we elevate practices, we elevate the profession. Produced and powered by LawPods.